You're listening to In the Vault, a KPMG banking industry podcast series.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to today's In the Vault podcast. I'm Liz Lamadou, a principal in KPMG's banking and capital markets tax practice. And today we're going to talk about auto interest loan reporting, a topic that's moved very quickly from the legislative maybe back last summer during OB3 into a major operational must now that we are in 2026. I'm happy to welcome back Kelly Wooten, a principal in our information reporting and withholding practice, and she's going to talk us through the technical waters of the new proposed regulations. Kelly, welcome. It's great to have you here.
Liz, it's a busy time for tax departments, especially as we start looking at all of the guidance that the IRS has issued on this matter since October.
That's exactly right. And so just to level set for our listeners, in October 25, we were all looking at notice from the IRS 2025-57, which gave banks essentially a much needed breather in the form of transitional relief for the auto loan reporting. Then on New Year's Eve, the Treasury and IRS dropped a major set of proposed regulations. So we're going to talk through some of those new rules. But before we get into that, Kelly, can you remind us about what the October relief notice really meant for a banking department?
Yes, that last minute holiday drop of proposed regulations. Those are always my favorites. But to sort of recap what that October relief had been, in October, the IRS had acknowledged that the industry needed some time to catch up with OB3's mid-year enactment. So rather than the banks and other lenders being required to file information returns, meaning that new form 1098 VLI, these lenders could satisfy their reporting obligations for 2025 by providing a statement of the total interest received during the calendar year to the borrower by January 31st, 2026. Now, that could be through an online portal, a monthly statement, an annual summary. So this was essentially a soft landing for an industry that was trying to go ahead and update systems without a draft form, without instructions, and without proposed regulations.
Yeah, agreed. That was a soft landing and really a gift of time. But now we've got proposed regulations. We've hit 2026, and I think we're seeing some harder rules, right?
Yes, now as people really start to can operationalize them. Now, the biggest takeaway and good news for industry is that the IRS is going to model this very closely after the home mortgage interest reporting rules that we already know, but more importantly, have already operationalized. One specifically interesting point is how we are going to define a specified passenger vehicle loan, or SPVL. It's not just any loan. It has to be originated after December 31st, 2024. It must be for an applicable passenger vehicle for personal use, and it must be secured by a first lien.
So that piece, I think, is significant for our banks. If it's an unsecured personal loan and not secured by a first lien, it doesn't fall under these rules. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. And the reporting threshold stayed at $600?
Yes. And this is a relief for some tax departments. That $600 threshold is per loan, not per borrower. So if a customer has two different car loans with your bank and each generates $500 in interest, you aren't required to report either one, even though that total is $1,000. However, the IRS did say that you can choose to report under the threshold if your systems aren't granular enough to filter those loans out.
Well, that's a good point. So there's no penalty for reporting additional information.
Yes, I always go back to more information is better than less. So over-reporting is better than under-reporting where you're going to hit those penalties. Now, the one thing that I would caution is over-reporting, if you do have an error on those forms, then even though you weren't required to report in the first place, you would still be subject to those information return penalties.
So let's talk about who is responsible for this reporting, Kelly? Because we know in the banking world, loans are sold, they're often serviced by someone different, they're packaged into securities constantly. So who's actually responsible for the filing?
First recipient is defined as the person that's engaged in a trade or business who receives the interest. So typically that's going to be the lender of record. But if you're a servicer collecting on behalf of someone else, the rules say that the initial recipient is responsible unless they don't have the borrower's info. In that case, the obligation can shift back to the ultimate recipient of the interest or the lender. It creates a real need for bank tax departments to look at their servicing agreements and ensure that whoever is touching the interest has the data, such as the VIN, that is going to be needed to actually complete the Form 1098 VLI.
You mentioned the VIN, and that initially, I think, was viewed as a heavy lift for a tax reporting system because usually that just tracks, you know, dollars and interest.
It really is. The draft Form 1098 VLI that we saw in October confirmed that the IRS wants the year, the make, the model, and the VIN of the specified passenger vehicle. So for many banks, that data is going to live in either the lending system or their collateral system, not their tax reporting system. So at other banks, we've learned that they do not maintain the VIN electronically. Rather, it's included on hard copies of titles that are sitting in storage. So bridging those gaps to assemble these data elements into a cohesive report to facilitate reporting is probably the number one operational challenge we're seeing right now. And it's important that it needs to be worked on right now because this is going to take IT teams a while to figure out how to cohesively assemble all that data.
I also noticed a specific rule in the proposed regs about foreign recipients. And I know, given the global footprint of a lot of banks, can you talk about how this affects international branches?
So it's the classic effectively connected rule. If a foreign bank receives the interest at a U.S. branch, they have to report. If it's received outside the United States, it's generally out of scope for reporting unless the recipient is a controlled foreign corporation or there is a U.S. trade or business that they're involved in. But on the flip side, you don't have to report if the payer is a non-resident alien, provided that you have a valid Form W-8 on file.
Okay, so a little bit of complexity there and a great reminder that information reporting and withholding is never just domestic. So Kelly, I think there's a bit of a timing trick in these proposed regs regarding the end of the year. Can you talk to us about the January 15th rule?
So this is another borrow from the mortgage world. So if a borrower makes a payment in late December that includes interest accruing through January 15th of the next year, the bank is allowed to report that interest in the current year. It's meant to go ahead and help banks align their reporting with the statements that they're already issuing.
Okay, so that sounds like a nice simplification for the banks. Kelly, as we look ahead, I know that there's going to be a hearing on the proposed regulations. Is there anything that operations departments or tax departments should be doing now?
Yes, definitely. So I would say the first key point here, and one that we've been encouraging organizations to do since the very beginning, is review these proposed regulations against your organization's data architecture. Are you able to identify what is a specified passenger vehicle versus a non-specified passenger vehicle? Are you electronically capturing the VINs and all of the other data that is going to be required to be reported? How are you capturing that data? Do you have one system that has all of that information? If so, that's fabulous. But from our discussions, we understand that that's not the position a lot of lenders are in. So sort of looking at that and figuring out how you can aggregate that information on the borrower across multiple systems. Next, you've got to consider that personal use issue. So the regulations or the proposed regulations say that an assignee can rely on the loan contract to determine if a car is for personal use unless they have a reason to know otherwise. So banks should be out there checking their loan origination documents to make sure that personal use checkbox is actually being captured. And finally, if these rules create a massive headache for your specific workflow, or there are other key issues, you do have 30 days from the publication date to submit comments, because the IRS is actively looking for ways to reduce the administrative burden.
I agree. And what we've seen with other proposed regulations is the current IRS is happy to receive comments and open to taxpayer suggestions. So I would second that, to get comments in or attend a public hearing with those comments.
Definitely. The IRS very much listens to the comments presented at the public hearings, and they really look to understand those, what is being asked for, and generally do try to ensure that they are addressing all of them as they look through. Now, some of them they will accept, some of them they will not accept, but they are looking through them to understand what the key issues are for industry.
Let's talk for a second about the timing of this provision and the longevity, let's say, because the legislation allows this deduction from 2025 through 2028. So really a four-year window. And we're talking about potentially a lot of systems work for a temporary provision. Of course, there's penalties for getting it wrong, and those penalties are very real.
Definitely. So that's where the interesting conundrum is going to come in for banks and other lenders. Right now, the deduction is only for 2025 through 2028. However, our experience in the past has been that when you have these deductions are very important to people, and there can be a lot of hesitancy to allow these deductions to sunset, particularly when you're looking at an election year that they would be sunsetting in. So this right now, it's only for that four-year window, but who knows what the future could bring.
Yes, I think those deductions are being taken by voters. So that does always make it interesting.
Exactly.
Kelly, this has been really helpful. I appreciate you breaking down the proposed regs for us. Is there anything else you would add in closing?
Important thing here is that we're in early 2026, and you essentially have a year to operationalize this reporting. So it's very important. Systemic changes are usually ones that take at least a year to implement by the time you have the business requirements designed. There's the technology implementation and the build, and then there's testing. So you want to go ahead as an organization and ensure that you are developing out those business requirements right now, so you're not really sort of burning that midnight oil going into 2027 to ensure that you are able to produce the necessary reports with that information aggregated across systems. If you think about it, this is also the time where the borrowers who took out those loans in 2025 are getting their first quasi-statements that are the equivalent of that Form 1098 VLI. And so you also want to make sure that you're touching base with your frontline teams, answering the phones to understand what types of questions borrowers are asking as they're calling in with questions on this. So lots to do right now, some to ensure that that 2025 reporting is in good shape and that the questions are answered and that the borrowers know what they need to do with that information, but a lot more work to ensure that that 2026 reporting is able to be completed timely and accurately.
Great tips and a great summary. So we got a So nice relief in October. Now we've got proposed regulations and it's time to get to work on system updates. So we'll be tracking this, including what comes of the February hearing, and we'll provide updates as they happen. So thank you very much, Kelly, for joining me. And to our listeners, thank you for joining as well. This is Liz Lamadou on behalf of KPMG. I look forward to talking again soon.
Thanks for listening to In the Vault with KPMG. Be sure to subscribe to this series to be notified of new episodes.